Yeah. Hey, I saw a movie last night. You have got to check this out. And I wasn't expecting much. I thought, I'll watch it. It's on Prime, so it's free, assuming you have Prime. Air. That's the name of the movie, is Air. And it's about the Nike creating the Air Jordan shoes and how that shoe saved the company. Nike was like at the third biggest shoe company. They had like 19% market share. You know, it was Adidas and Converse were the two big ones. But anyways, the movie was not about Michael Jordan. And I think a lot of people might go to the movie thinking it's going to be about Michael Jordan. And there's a guy who plays him, but you never actually see his face. So they do a really good job of like, oh, it's just his back. And I think the point they're trying to make is this isn't a movie about Michael Jordan. It's about these guys at Nike. And it's a movie about marketing, which I think was so fascinating. And the way it's Matt Damon and Ben Affleck directed it, and Jason Bateman. And it just shows how they were able to take the guy who everybody wanted, Michael Jordan, just fresh out of college or high school or something. He was like 18 years old. He was a really young guy. And everybody wanted him. And they knew that Adidas and Converse were going to they had him. They were going to get this guy to be a sponsor for their shoes. And so Nike was like, well, what can we do? We don't have the budget for this. We have $250,000 and we want to spread that across three different players. So we're taking these players further down the echelon of basketball hopefuls. And so then the marketing guy was like, okay, here's what I want to do. I want to spend the entire $250,000 on Michael Jordan. Let's just see if we can get him. Michael Jordan had no interest in Nike. In fact, he was like adamant, like that would be the last thing I would ever do would be use Nike. I'm an Adidas guy. I love their running suits and all of this, and all of these things. So anyways, the story just tells how they were able, this one guy was basically able to kind of court Michael Jordan's mom, because his mom was kind of instrumental in kind of managing this early part of his career and setting up these deals. She was real savvy with what was going on, and very clever. I guess I probably shouldn't say the spoilers if people don't know the story, but it was real clever and brilliant the way he was able to get this Air Jordan made under a super short timeline and sell this to Michael Jordan. But the twist comes towards the end when his mom says, we all know they're going to take the deal, but she says, we're going to take the deal as long as, and she adds one more thing, and that's Michael Jordan wants a cut of every shoe sold. And that,
which I'm sure was the first time
ever. That was the first time. And that's what made him the wealthiest athlete in history and probably the greatest athlete in history. And that changed everything in how sports, like apparel and everything, is sold and sponsorships work. That single thing that his mom came up with to do this is why today athletes have these endorsements and they get a cut of that thing. But Michael Jordan is still, I mean, he's making a mint. I forget what it said at the end, you know, the post-credit things, like his passive income from the Air Jordan shoes is just like, I don't know, $120 million a year or something. It's crazy.
So no spoilers, but they ended up selling some shoes, is what you're saying.
Yeah. I know, I said no spoilers, but everybody knows the story, so I guess I just spoiled it for anyways. But what a good movie. But I think what was best about it is it's inspiring to anybody who has something that they want to sell or a service they want to perform, and how you can really focus on the person you're trying to sell that to and get them involved in it and make it special. They were like, we're not making, you know, shoes. We're making a shoe for Michael Jordan, specifically for him. And that's going to be the point. People are going to want to buy this shoe because it's a special one just for him.
Right.
It was really good.
And now it's not special because A, all of the stores are Nike stores. So all of this, like they won. They won by a huge
Converse
margin.
Too.
I remember the days back in, I don't know, I guess it was the 90s where you could walk through a mall and you'd see the Adidas store, the Reebok store, the ASICS store, yeah. Like there was a full range. And now these massive mega Nike stores downtown right. Chicago, five levels, and you can make your own shoe. You can make your own shoe. And every athlete has their corresponding shoes. Because I obviously this set the trend, which would become, I guess, kind of the standard now. I'm sure every athlete coming out of college already has their athletic sponsorships lined up for them even before they get drafted.
It was about kind of looking at your product differently too, because Nike had this idea that they were selling running shoes. That was the shoe because everybody was a runner. It's you could sell millions of shoes because everybody needed a running shoe. A basketball shoe didn't make sense to them because not everybody played basketball. It wasn't a huge market. And among like the basketball community and street kids playing, Nike was just dorky. It was like the worst brand. You wouldn't be caught dead wearing that. Adidas was where it's at. So they just had to change that whole mindset. It's like, well, no, you don't have to play basketball, but you like this guy who really loves play basketball and you can be like Jordan.
A few years later, a basketball player named Shaquille O'Neal was lined up for an incredibly sweet deal. He was at the point where he could have, you know, done anything he wanted because he was already successful in this, that, and the other. And he demanded his shoes be affordable and sold at Walmart. And he went on to sell, I believe, more shoes.
Wow.
And probably not, because I think the amount of varieties that they've had with Air Jordans, like every year they release like 19 different styles of the Air Jordan and whatnot. So I'm sure that number's off, but like his shoes, and I remember seeing them at Walmart, and it was at that time, and it's still that time, where it's like, if you want a good pair of running shoes, it's like $200. Yeah. And he was adamant about making sure that they were, I don't know, $30 or $20 and being able to being sold at Walmart, which I guess makes them then, if you wear them, you're like, you're wearing $20 shoes. But ultimately, I don't know, that's using that system for good, maybe.
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah, there has to be affordable products for people.
It's exactly why McDonald's is still my favorite restaurant. I've decided. I went there
really?
The other day. Yeah, because I was there the other day. You know what it is? I'm tired of overpaying for something. I mean, at the end of the day, it still just kind of fills you. And I know restaurants just fill their stuff full of sugar and salt to make it more tasty anyways. And I like that McDonald's has already moved to the electronic board menus. So they seem to be a restaurant of the future, and it's still somewhat affordable.
Honestly,
to eat there.
I have not been into a McDonald's in probably 15, 20 years or so.
Do you have a fast food restaurant
of choice? If I go to one, it's going to be In-N-Out. That's a burger place here in California.
What is it about In-N-Out that you like so much? And I have had In-N-Out.
Have you? I like the philosophy. For one, it's just a private company still, so it's still pretty small. It's been that way for a long time. Every store has the two crossed palm trees in front of it, going back to it's a Mad World movie. But they have a very limited menu. It's like basically three things you can get: burger, fries, and a soda. And the menu is super simple when you go up there. They don't have anything on there. They have this like secret menu you can order off of if you want. You can go online and find out kind of what those things are. But basically, you're just getting a double fries and a soda, and you're getting a really, really good all beef burger. It just tastes so good. It tastes closest to what a burger should probably taste like. To me, a lot of fast food burgers taste, they have this weird, they could be good, but they have this weird taste to me. They don't taste like a burger, like what you would grill in your backyard or
right.
something. Or some of these like fast casual places that are springing up everywhere. You know, we're like, we have one called The Habit, and there's like the Smash Burger, and Five Guys would be one of those. Mm-hmm. You have to wait a little longer, but the burger is definitely an elevated experience from fast food. And so I guess if I go to those those would be the types of places I've been to. The last time I went to McDonald's, I didn't have a very good experience, and the burger kind of upset my stomach. But that, again, that was a long time ago.
Okay, so I mean, I was maybe slightly tongue-in-cheek. McDonald's is more of a holistic experience, also with a child. If you go to one with a really big play place, and we have one.
And they get the Happy Meal.
They get the Happy Meal. It makes, it truly makes my kid happy, and every other kid that you see at a McDonald's. Like, we all know what we're doing. We know what they're there for, and it's like, it's fine. And I like that it's still that way for me when I go in. However, it's probably not my favorite fast food burger. I like McDonald's because of kind of what McDonald's represents. But Five Guys, it's worth the extra wait because it is a very tasty burger. But the issue I have about restaurants, or like some of those more higher end exotic burger places that'll charge you like $20 or $25 for a burger, is it's, and this goes back to a conversation we had in our last podcast, it's not worth the extra money that you're paying for it. Because if you go to Five Guys, you can still get a combo for whatever it is. I mean, I'm in Canadian dollars, so it's like $10.99 or $12.99. So it's like a dollar, I think, US or whatever the exchange is. Either way, it's cheap at a place like that. But you go to a restaurant and they have the, you know, the cojones to basically give you exactly that, but charge you twice because you're quote unquote at a restaurant.
Right.
And I'm done with that.
Yeah, I can see that too. We went to Gordon Ramsay's restaurant. It's called Burger with, there's no second E, it's just Burger.
Yeah, of course there needs to be a misspelling.
Yeah, so we went to that in Las Vegas a few years back. And I'm not going to lie, it was a good burger. It was huge. It's one of these where it's stacked up so high, you look at it, you're like, how exactly am I supposed to eat this? You kind of have to smash it down. But the thing about his restaurant was the service. Holy shit. There was like, there were about eight of us eating together. It was for a wedding I was going to. And these servers all came out, like eight servers at the same time, and brought the meal to every single person at once. And they would constantly coming around. And see, this is the thing. I really don't remember much about the food, but I remember the service.
And I remember the service too. And that's maybe part of the reason why, especially now, it's difficult at a restaurant because they don't have eight servers. You barely have one server serving it. And, you know, three meals come out. And I guess that's, I'm sure you probably paid for that.
Yeah, I mean, it's expensive. Luxury of having, it was expensive.
Yeah.
For a burger, I mean, you're looking at what, maybe 20, 25 bucks for a burger, which is kind of crazy.
But to go back to fast food or McDonald's, if I go there with eight people, I know that we're probably going to get our meals at the same time. We'll be eating.
Well, it's exactly the same.
We know what the situation is. And I'm paying for it. Plus, I'm still sitting and I'm talking and all the rest. So, now you kind of see what I'm driving at.
Because the fancier you get. You make a good point there, because really, when it comes down to it, you're eating food, sitting around a table and talking with friends,
and you're either spending a lot doing it, or you're spending money on other things. Like, and we went to not a fit, like just a franchise restaurant not too long ago. I think it was called Montana's or something like that, and it's like a barbecue kind of restaurant. And it was like five kids and five adults and da da da. All the food came out at different times.
Oh, yeah.
One person come, I have the... And they
have to auction it in off. The restaurant.
They used to call it auctioning it off. Don't ever auction at a table. And I can see why Gordon Ramsay would be like, that'd be like rule number one at a Gordon Ramsay restaurant. It's like, don't auction food. Know exactly where this plate is going and put it in front of the person.
Yeah.
But that's exactly what happened, especially when you have kids,
right?
And then like these other food dishes are coming out, and your kid who literally just ordered a thing of fries is still kind of sitting and waiting.
Well, and if you go to like, and it's a perfect place to take kids, because it's really difficult to go with take kids to kind of a finer dining experience, because you know you're going to be there a while, you've got to sit still, there's going to be adults talking. I remember when I was a kid, and I used to just hate it, because I was like, it took forever. The parents, the adults would be talking, and then I'd be like, oh, finally we're ready. And then inevitably one of them would say, who wants coffee? And I'd be like, oh shit,
no. I could go for a coffee.
I'm like, damn, I'm squirming around at the table. And sit down, be quiet, stop.
Right? Back in the days where you didn't even have like a phone to distract yourself.
You had maybe a menu that you could color on.
Play with a spoon or something like that.
That's funny. It's funny, we go to restaurants though still as adults, and you'll see people who are like very particular about what table they get. You know, they're like, no, I don't like that table. It's like, it's just
a
table.
That one, by the way.
You're just going to sit at a table.
Yeah.
And now, it's not going to change your experience that much.
Right. Right. You're still going to spend too much money to eat some poorly made food. And here's the rub. So at the end of the meal, you could see that the poor server was overworked and underpaid and underappreciated and all of the rest. So I'm not going to take it out on the server and be like 10% tip because you could have done better. And we're in this weird tipping world now where everybody even when you don't need to tip, you have to tip. So there was this guilt tip at the end, and with a table of 10 people at like even a medium sized restaurant, it's like that was like $50, and it was like $50 for some poor ass service. And it was just like, I'm done with this system. These restaurants take up too much of a footprint. On with it. I'll go to McDonald's.
Well, we go out to eat once a week to a kind of a sit down dinner. But this week on Sunday because my birthday fell on Mother's Day this year. It does that every so often. And it's always been kind of like one of these things where you're like, no, I don't want to share my birthday. But we went out for Indian food and it was super crowded. Luckily, Kathy had made reservations so that we could get into this Indian restaurant. And at the end of it, we're like, who's going to pay for this? Are you going to pay for this? Is this a birthday meal or is this a Mother's Day meal? And then I'm like, I don't think I want you paying for it because everybody around us is going to see you pulling out your card and it's Mother's Day. Everybody assumes we're here just for Mother's Day. And she's like, stop it. I'm paying for this. And so she paid for it. I'm like I just wanted to say, no, it's also my birthday. We're here for two things.
Yeah. You stand up. Intentionally wear like a birthday boy shirt or something like that to let people know.
Oh, that was funny.
I want to do my first woodworking project.
Really?
And I was hoping to, if you remember 3 years ago, I think it was about 3 years ago when you gifted the course to me.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And I took the weekend woodworker and I was like, yes, this is it. And I took your tool list and I went and I got all the tools. And then COVID happened and I don't know quite what happened with my, like, I need to start, you know, doing other things, interest. So now it's back. It's back in a big way. And I have all of those tools, which I'm ready to take out of the box, embarrassingly so, out of the box. But I'm going to be very open about that because I think that that's perhaps quite relatable. And I think after a lot of thought, I want my first project to be your doormat.
Oh, really?
The reason why is because it looked like a very simple project that it could probably knock out. I also know project number two, and I'll bring that up in a second. But and then after we talked about it, I think we talked about it on the podcast last week, where you brought up the fact that it's like, it's not technically a doormat.
Yeah, I still get those comments.
I'm going to continue the controversy. And I'm going to make a doormat out of the wood that you... yes, but I actually need one. I actually need two of them. So that's what I'm hoping to do.
Are you going to... Do you have a drill press? Because that would definitely help. I think I mentioned that in the video. It's going to be kind of difficult to do it without a drill press. You could maybe work up a system. And I was thinking you could... It wouldn't be too hard to... Okay, you drill, you know how each of those slats has a hole that goes all the way through. I'm pretty sure people listening to this are thrilled with this part, but I'll keep this brief. There's this hole that goes through each of the slats. So if you do that on one of those slats, then you take that slat and use it as a template for drilling the others. So you would just set it on top of the next one, put your drill bit through that hole that's already there, and then just drill it through there. So you've kind of got like a starter hole on each one. And so I think that would work.
Oh, I see. Okay. And I have a very steady hand, so I'm willing to.
Yeah. Maybe you can make it a little oversized too, so there's some wiggle room there. But.
So what the other project was, and I think the ultimate project, and again, we talked about this before, was, and I think you have a video about this, the kitchen organizing drawers.
Oh,
that was the first one that really, like, in the back of my head, I'm like, this is the one.
Yeah.
More recently, when I saw the doormats, and because I do need some doormats, I'm like, oh, this is perfect, and this one even looks easier than the, and actually, perhaps you can correct me if I'm wrong, is the drawer organizing one all that challenging?
No, it's pretty straightforward project. I think that that is probably one of the most useful projects I've ever made. I That's what this most recent one I made was the fourth one I've made. The third one I've made a video about, because each time I kind of like improved it. And so now I think I've finally reached the ultimate design. But man, you know, you cannot buy a good drawer organizer for your kitchen to organize all the silverware, flatware, I guess they call it, because they don't work. I remember buying one of these that they say expandable. And all it is it has slots for your spoons, forks, and knives, and then the expandable part, it just expands into just a big open tray. Like, well, that's not really expanding, it's just, I don't know, giving you a little extra space. In fact, it's probably taking up space, because if you didn't have that, you would just use the drawer space itself
without these little pieces of wood divided. And then yeah. Just like, yeah, so I have one of those as well, the expanding ones. It's in our main drawer. And you're right, the two sides expand and they just make larger, kind of areas on the side. But the issue is it's also not deep enough. So every time you open the drawer, it slides.
Oh, that's the worst.
All over in the drawer. So it just feels like you're,
Yeah, that's out of all the things I've made, I think a drawer organizer is probably the most useful thing. It's the one thing I'd never regret making that. Man, it's so cool.
So the other thing, and the reason why I want to get into this, is because I want to start using these as gifts. Yeah. I know my wife doesn't listen to this podcast, so one of the things, it wouldn't be the doormat, the reason why I wanted to do the drawer organizer, I'm like, oh, I should surprise her for her birthday by doing a project like this, mm-hmm. and be like, hey, look. And I just think it's such a cooler gift, like when someone makes you something,
it
and
is.
I feel weird, like, painting a painting for someone, because I'm not too sure if that relates so much, but do you make things and use them as
oh,
gifts?
Sure.
And
like, yeah. I haven't really been doing that a whole lot the past few years, but I used to always make Christmas gifts and birthday gifts. And I think that probably the best gift you can make somebody, which is pretty easy to make, is it's just a box, a simple little box to store things in. I've given away so many different little sizes, long ones, short ones, shallow ones, with just a lid on top. People love those things. People just love to have a little box that, and especially, you know, you could give it to them with something in it. It doesn't have to be a jewelry or something, but it could be something. And then, I don't know. It's just one of those things, especially women. Women, and this is very, I guess, what would you call that, gender affirming or whatever. But I've noticed that women tend to like very small little boxes that they can just keep little things in.
Like a knickknack box or whatnot. And like, it seems like that is such a fulfilling project to do, because like doing these, you know, doing a project like, oh, this is a drawer organizer is one thing, but doing a drawer organizer and it being like, this is exactly the drawer organizer that she needs in a drawer, which she's constantly, you know, trying to find the thing that she's looking for. And every time she uses it, she'll be like, man, my husband's a handy guy.
There you go.
That's ultimately what I'm going for.
Yeah, you got this. You could definitely do that. It's a great project.
What kind of material, like what do you go to the hardware store and buy wood and bring it back and cut it up?
Yeah. I used like 2x4s or something and cut it down into pieces. But you can, you know, obviously you can use a nicer wood than that if you want to. It's just the shtick on my channel though, is to use, you know, low quality stuff. But
and Ryobi tools, I bet
those bastards. Yeah. Oh man, you can't trust anybody that uses a Ryobi tool.
So I know when we talked last time about that, we were like, "Hey, let's look at sponsored videos." And I watched some videos, and I don't know where the spot. Like, it's just the same three sponsors over and over and over again in everybody's video. There's nothing new coming out.
No.
And ad revenue is falling through the floor. I don't know if you're having that issue on your channel.
Do you see that YouTube is blocking the ad blockers now? Or I guess is it fully rolled out, the system that they've got in place to block ads?
I guess that's why it was announced, because they have finally just like flip the switch and now you can't. I don't know anybody who uses an ad blocker.
Well, that's,
perhaps I'm the wrong generation.
The thing. For one, I think that if you're watching a lot of YouTube, you got to do yourself a favor and get YouTube Premium. If you're listening to a lot of Spotify, get the paid version, because it's just a pain in the ass to have to watch or listen to all these ads. And it's not that much to get the premium, and it makes your life so much better. But I think that the idea with the ad blockers, and you sent me a video, or I don't remember if I sent you that from Penguin Zero, and I've talked about him on the show before. Mm-hmm. He kind of keeps up with the YouTube things that are happening and drama. And a lot of times I really agree with him, but on this one, I really disagreed with his whole take on this thing, because he was like, you know, fuck YouTube, you know, power to the people. We want our ad blockers. Everybody uses an ad blocker. I always recommend it. And it's easy for him to say that because he's a channel with like 6 million subscribers or something. And every video he releases gets well over 1 million views. He's always trending. He releases like 3 videos a week. Dudes make a lot of money. I think it's pretty easy for him to say that. But for regular people, especially just starting out with a YouTube channel and want to get that ad revenue, I think it's important that those ads are seen and turned on. I don't like watching ads either. That's why I have YouTube Premium. I figured I'm paying what they would want me to watch those ads anyways. It's worth it to me to not have to sit through those ads. I haven't seen an ad in years, ever since YouTube Red came along and they started offering that service. But I just think that I just don't think that that's fair to people, to expect that people are going to produce media for you that you consume for free.
And because when I see the ads, I'm annoyed by them as well. But like, that's the way this creator's getting supported right now.
And that's why there's so many in video sponsored spots, probably, is because the ad revenue that YouTube pays is so low, and probably also because of all the ad blockers.
Get blocked all the time.
Yeah, so like, I do a Squarespace thing, and then now we all have to skip through those by, you know, click, 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 click until you're through that whole ad.
But at the same time, they'll have no problem, you know, being like, hey, go to Patreon and support me on Patreon, which is essentially the same thing. Like, it's like there's an exchange of time or money or resource. Something is being exchanged for the free content that I'm looking at. And I don't see how you can, especially as a content creator like Charlie is, or whatever his name is. I don't know how you can be so away from understanding the value of what ads bring to content.
I'm sure he understands that. I think that it's a convenient
hypocrisy. Like, it's just like, I don't care.
Well, I mean, you
could
look through the comments on that video, and there's, you know, he gets thousands of comments, and they're all kind of like the same thing. Yeah, man, we this is cool. Everybody should have ad blocker, and I support you. Thanks for making this video. And a lot of the comments were something along the lines of, well, it's funny how YouTube works out a way to block the ad blockers, but they won't work on getting rid of the spam bots, or they won't do this. And that's just a logical fallacy when you think that because you're doing one thing that you're not also doing another thing. Those things don't compare. So people are kind of justifying the ad blockers because YouTube is doing other things that they don't like. It's a strange mindset.
Usually the same people who complain about having to pay for anything.
Probably.
And quite honestly, like, at some point, like, understand that when you're looking and watching and being annoyed by an ad, it is a way to support the content that you're consuming. Like, we do not watch TV at any point and see a commercial break during a show.
Right.
And like, yes, of course, everybody went off. No one paid attention. We understand it's not a good, it's a horrible system. And I'm going to be so happy when it's a relic of the past. It like, impeding on the actual content with advertising is intrusive. It's silly. I get that people maybe don't fully want a subscription system where they pay and that is eliminated, but there needs to be some other form of of integration with advertising versus this ridiculous, this is brought to you by NordVPN.
Yeah,
like,
I
we know
agree.
What's happening. It's cliche now. It's not working. And who really needs a VPN? I also don't know anybody who uses a VPN.
No.
Steve,
no.
Do you know anybody who uses
a
VPN?
It used to be they would advertise those as because you're going to get hacked in a hotel room if you use their Wi-Fi. But they've kind of gone away from that. Now their only selling point is you can watch Australian Netflix.
That's all you got. That's all they have for the, and then whatever it is, $19.99 a month for the particular service.
I think it's just this whole ad thing with YouTube. For one, the ads is really what built YouTube because then people started to want to produce content. There was a real incentive for producing content and making your content seen by a lot of people because you wanted to get paid for it.
But they're YouTube, man. They have billions and billions and billions of dollars. They can just do whatever they want.
I just made my video, my 15, I probably post it or publish it today, 15 years on YouTube and what I've learned. And it turned out to be kind of a two-part video. The first part was about kind of my backstory of YouTube, which I thought was interesting. I was careful to put a timestamp on there. Like, if you want to get to the 15 things, here it is. Because that's, I put on there, that's the 16th thing I've learned, is you better say when that starts. But some of the things I was talking about in there, and I wasn't intending to do it, but I realized that it was actually pretty complimentary about YouTube. I think if I had to assess the 15 years that I've been on the platform, YouTube now is much better than it was 15 years ago. I mean, sure, there were individual things and its quirkiness and its newness was something special back then. But all of the changes that YouTube has implemented, for the most part, have worked out and have actually improved the platform and have improved the experience. And I mentioned in that video that YouTube isn't out to get you. And I think that's what a lot of people think. They're like, viewers and creators alike think that YouTube's job is to just destroy you. I don't want you. It's like, no, of course not. YouTube wants you as a creator to succeed so they can make billions more. And they want you to keep watching. So they're going to try to feed you the videos they think that you're going to watch. And they want to try to create a system where creators can thrive. But they do have to get through this whole ad business.
But they literally have the most successful platform today. If you want to build a career, they literally, for the past 10 years, have started as like, oh my gosh, this is the coolest new thing. And 10 years later, remain the thing.
Yeah.
As in, TikTok is here, but you don't have people being like, oh yeah, my business is based on my TikTok account. And I did it. Like, we have businesses and have built careers off of YouTube. And that can still be said
today. I think that there
are
millions of people now who have careers on YouTube, which is amazing.
Yes. And it can still be said today, even in the highly competitive world, and that isn't true for TikTok, that isn't true for Instagram, that isn't true for anything else that doesn't allow you the full-on context of a 30-minute video about railroad ties from the 1930s. And like, there's an audience, and like, there's nowhere else that you can go to just consume content on this level and have it moderated the way it is, have a whole kids section, which has been through all of the history that it's been through, and like not have one of those things debilitate it and turn it into a MySpace or even a Facebook where it kind of becomes a relic. It's like, oh, remember what? They are still the premium, top-notch like media platform, arguably, like on the planet today. Like, and even eclipsing mainstream media, clearly they did that a while ago where it was like people trust kind of what they see, quote unquote, online. But what they saw online was YouTube. So where else are you going? Like, no one goes to the Wall Street Journal, you know, website to watch one of their embedded videos.
And then you have to sit through the ad, all those damn things. God, it drives you crazy. Like, please.
And we have talked about this like at length and we don't need to get into it again, but there's that Trajectory is not available on TikTok. It's not available on Twitch. It's not available on any of the other platforms that are here to like take over the, hey, just go somewhere and you'll be able to see the video of this or the trailer for that or this song or whatever. Like YouTube has that and it's wrapped up and it's not this degraded, weird, you know, half-assed version of what it used to be. It's actually, to your point, way
better.
It
just works for, especially with discoverability. And this is, I think, one of the most mind-boggling things is to think about how much video is uploaded to YouTube. The most recent figures I've seen is 300 hours of video are uploaded every minute of the day. It's like something like 3.5 to 4 million videos per day are uploaded to YouTube. And so all of this has to be automated in such a way that is incredible, the way that it can serve you basically the kinds of videos that you're interested in and not be showing you stuff that you have no interest in. You know, I'm not getting like tennis videos in my feed or something like that. And so considering all of that, it's incredible that they've developed a platform like that that can give you that kind of material.
With all this advancement, all this technology, and I get how that obviously hampers your ability to like get in touch with all other creators and exchange, like you can see their communication issues and you can almost forgive it because I'm sure it's an entire mountain of people just to be able to get people not to game the system versus a whole group of people being able to be dedicated towards looking into copyright claims or looking into like whatever.
And there's going to be problems. You know, and there's going to be problems. And then whenever those happen, people think, why are they blocking my video? Why can't I? And it's like, well, do you think that they have individual people at YouTube watching every single 300 hours per minute? You know, it has to be an automated system. When you have an automated system managing that much stuff, there's going to be problems with it. There's going to be those, you know, false takedowns, or there's going to be the fall. And the amazing thing is that when something horrible happens, and we've known people who've had their channels hacked, you can get it back because at some point you can actually talk to somebody at YouTube, which is pretty incredible.
Yeah, I guess it just needs to be a serious enough issue or emergency to that you end up getting kind of brought to the gates.
I think so. It can work out. I think it's just a good example of how technology is, for the most part, able to provide a solution for this.
So congratulations, YouTube. Actually, after all that has been said about you, you've done an incredibly good job.
After as much as we bitch about everything on YouTube.
But we haven't. We're normally the people pointing out the fact that it's a little silly to be, you know, like, I can't believe you took this away from me.
Oh, they fixed my thing. You know, when I was doing the sort by oldest on your video tab, I was going to this Creator Insider channel and leaving a comment every single week about this. And they actually, I guess I can say this now, they didn't want me to say it because now they've made it public that they're bringing that feature back. But the team they're in Switzerland who works on this part of the video channels or whatever. It's surprising how few people actually develop YouTube. It's not a huge amount. It's not like thousands of people. It's like under 100. I mean, it's a real small group of people. But I talked to the lead guy who's in charge of that. He actually contacted me and was like, I really want to talk to you about these comments you've been leaving. So YouTube was reading those comments. And then he was like, he actually apologized. He was like really apologetic. He was like, when I read your comments, I was just kind of shocked and we were all really sad because we thought we were doing the right thing. We didn't need this feature. And then to hear from you and other people that this was something that you use. And he asked, how exactly do you use this? Why is this important to you? And then he's like, well, the good news is that we've decided to return that feature, but it's going to take a while because the whole way the system works, blah, blah, blah. He went into a lot of techno babble that I didn't understand. And even the techno babble that I didn't understand was about why they had to remove that feature, which when I was listening to it, it made sense, at least in the sense that I could go, yeah, I understand. But, you know, there was a technical reason why they removed that feature. And now to put it back in, they have to kind of rebuild that whole thing. But anyways, it was just a great example of how YouTube actually listened to its creators and they brought it back.
And the fact that they had to scratch their head and wonder why someone didn't want to be able to go to someone's channel and watch the first video that those people, or the first couple of videos that
those
people
were doing
have ever...
was looking at the numbers. They were, he told numbers. Me that there was, it was like less than 1% of the people ever use that feature or something. So when you're looking at the numbers alone, but that 1% is super, super important. And also I think that 1%, maybe that's just because it's not something most people use all the time, but most people probably have used maybe just once or something, or they go to a channel and I wonder what the very first video is.
Right. Like you have the most, but you understand that you'd want to see the person's most popular video. You're probably going to see the person's latest video somewhere prioritized. I don't know why they would think that people wouldn't want to go back and be like, I want to see the old videos. That's very logical. From a database standpoint, you know, it really is just a sort by feature. Right. But I'm sure they gave you some very now that the feature's back, is it called like the sort by Steve Ramsey? Or is it
it's not actually back yet. They just announced that it will be back. And so that's kind of a good thing.
Well, on behalf of the YouTube community, thank you,
I'd like
Steve
to thank
Ramsey.
I took credit for that. I was Shawshanking then. That's what I called it. Where you've seen Shawshank Redemption, where Andy Dufresne starts mailing letters to this congressman or something to get what it was he wanted done. But his whole strategy was just like, keep mailing him a letter every single day until they get so tired of you, they give in. So I Shawshanked YouTube.
It's a great example of just looking at numbers and making decisions without truly thinking, or like I get how perhaps a group of engineers or technical people would be like, yes, we think that but the fact that that wasn't like crowdsourced or like a thing like that was just boiled down to like, statistically, look, there's this. And to your point, but that 1%, like it's so important for the 1% that do use it this way. And there's still just an element of having things for the sake of like usability. Mm-hmm. It seems that anything that can be trimmed down because it's wasteful or because it doesn't hit certain metrics or numbers, but then everything is just compared to like numbers. And then you lose a feature, which is actually useful.
Yeah. Here's a feature also that I am not sure about, and I think I mentioned this to you probably a year or two ago, notifications. When you turn on notifications, does it do anything when you ring that bell? I don't get notifications. I've experimented with this, and is it supposed to notify me on my phone, or does it just mean when you're logged into YouTube, it notifies you?
Does it give you a drop down? Is that what a notification is? Because sometimes I see when someone goes live, if I'm on the app, it'll be like, boop, you know, someone's going live right now.
It must be I don't know if it's a separate system from the, when there's going to be a live feed and you say, you know, because the thumbnail come up, you know, maybe days in advance saying there's going to be a live stream.
Yes.
Notify me. There'll be a button and you push notify me and I don't get anything.
We've talked about this before because we were doing so, and you did a live not too long ago, didn't you? Yeah. I have no idea. I do know, though, that some of the real savvy creators that I follow still do the, hey, subscribe to the channel and hit
ring
the notification bell to get... We kind of stopped doing that. Like, we have actually kind of cut calls to action like that almost out of our videos completely. Do you still do like, hey,
not only calls
smash
to action are for my own products,
for your for a course or something like that. But no more smashing the like button or
people know how to subscribe. I don't know, you know, how much that really does. I mean, I guess YouTube, they'll tell you, and it's probably true, that if you remind people to subscribe, they will subscribe. But I don't know if that's really how I want subscribers. And the fact that subscribers, I just don't really, doesn't really matter to me.
Do you sometimes watch a creator and they ask to subscribe in a really creative way and you're like, man, I wish I could do it like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's true. I think who does it really well? I think Half Asleep Chris, I think he might do some really good ones.
Yeah. Kevin Espiritu will throw in some creative unique ways to do it. Yeah, but you know what? Then you end up getting into that whole like, now I'm making kind of the content be kind of self-aware.
Honestly,
and
I think maybe asking people to like a video is probably more important than asking them to subscribe, because I think like probably tells that algorithm to spread your video. More.
I have no idea how. I understood the first part of this year since 2023, something is different, and like this isn't that regular YouTuber complaining stuff.
Yeah, so
like,
go back to what you were talking about with the ad revenue. What have you been experiencing? Is it just this year?
Yeah, because I clearly know they're moving away from that model. Obviously ad revenue is kind of like putting ads in the thing and then them paying on an auction system. Mm-hmm. Like that'll go away. They want to move towards a different style of whatever. So we just have noticed that views are down, the CPM is down, and just overall it's, even with the content that used to engage, it seems like there is either throttling going on or it takes something a lot more special to get into the recommended engine. It seems like everything can kind of go to your audience. It's not really that anymore. And then they base upon your audience, whether or not it does well. And if it does well within your audience, then it follows through to whatever kind of recommended system it goes into. And that always used to be like, okay, maybe it won't do it right out of the gate, but within a week, the system will kind of see that it's like, oh yeah, look at all the likes that this video gets. It's the long watch time. So this is a good one to like throw out into the recommended and da 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 da. And that just doesn't happen anymore. To conversations that we've had in the past about like you release something that you know is going to be good, and it bounces all around the top.
That's
10.
Changed.
And
that's something that's changed over the past year or so, is that unpredictability of a video.
There's something definitely more random about it, and it makes me happy, because especially now that I'm off the hamster wheel of like, what's the next video? It really puts into perspective like what our videos are. So it allows us just to do the video. Like we're here to make cleaning videos. You make, you know, I'm going to stop this silly hamster wheel of like, trying to word it differently. No, this is what we do. People will come across it and they will like it for what it is. And I don't think anything that necessarily gets crammed or crowbarred into it is going to add to it versus take away from what we're trying to do, which is like, here's just some cleaning tips for you. And we're not going to dress it up in some weird way, which tries to like lure extra views out of it. And maybe that's what they're going for. Maybe they're just looking for like, hey, don't try to over advertise your video. Put a piece of content out there. We will put it in the system.
We'll take care of the
and
rest,
the quality will rise to the top, perhaps.
I kind of think so. I have a newfound sense of freedom since I stopped worrying so much about how each individual video performs, and that I'm able to deal with the fact that videos aren't doing as well. Some do. Some do really well. Some videos I'm doing are doing better than ever. The long format is really, YouTube is really rewarding these 30-minute videos. I got to tell you, they've been pretty good. But like this video I'm going to be publishing about my 15 years on YouTube, I almost guarantee that's going to be 10 out of 10. You know, it's just not what people really want to see. But the people who watch it are really going to like it, because those are the people who are interested in that story about 15 years.
And that's almost the reason why you should be making the video. So it's kind of good that you've relegated it to be 10 out of 10, because it's not like there's no weird pressure associated with it. And you're right. So now when we sit down to discuss our production schedule or what we want to do next, there was always like, oh, what's trending, what's working? We certainly still want to find out what people are searching for, but it's just like what people are searching for. Right now it's, you know, a lot of people are asking about the how to clean the new iPhone and how to do this. And for some strange reason, a fridge is really popular. And instead of this asinine, well, last week we did this video, so let's do this kind of video to mix it up in the content buckets and da da da. And it's just nice to go back to like, let's make what, you know, has always worked. And my thought has been, and we talked about this a long time ago, about there's an AI that just clearly listens to the video and understands the video. So no matter what you title it, no matter what you like, you know, hashtag or however you trick the system or thumbnail or whatever, they know what the video is. It's 11 minutes and 50 seconds of you doing a, you know, commercial for a tool versus actually doing a project. Now I'm listening to the Steve Ramsey video. The entire video has, you know, literally one mention of a call to action off of platform. Everything else is contained within this video. If you were to listen to this video, you would learn about this project. I understand his nuance. He's clearly speaking to beginners. This is a great video for someone who's looking how to build, you know, whatever this project might be. So perhaps the system which might get us out of crap content is literally having the non-humans, because you said like they don't have the AI. Humans to whatever, yeah. They will have an AI that literally, I mean, it clearly has already, because I remember talking on this podcast in 2020 about that stupid channel, that guy Guava Juice, who used to do like, I'm in the 10,000 balls, I'm pouring 100 billion orbits into my swimming pool, like those stupid challenges. And he was very clickbaity, and he would usually put stuff in the thumbnail or in his title, which wasn't even really accurate, like way overstatements, just to really clickbait people. And then I remember sharing a story on the podcast about he kind of knew that the way that this truly ends up working is if you include that in the video, because they listen to the words in the video. Very early form of AI, I'm sure. They were constantly like, hey, you named the video this, but clearly the video is talking about that, so we're not going to give you any relevance, regardless of what your description is or how many hashtags you tried to trick the system with. So now it kind of seems like it's like, This is a cleaning video, so it's rather boring, and it's going to sit into the, you know, into the ether until it gets discovered organically, and then sooner or later that's going to have more relevance, because it's like, hey, look, this has lasted, you know, the test of time, versus this is a Clean My Space video. It's a brand new Clean My Space video, so it's probably pretty good. So put it out there and advertise it to everyone, as opposed to everything kind of going through the same system of like the relevancy is in the content. Wouldn't it be crazy if content ended up being king, because you can't fake that? You cannot fake the actual meat and potatoes of your video.
Yes. And I think that this is a good example of how AI can really improve something, because AI will have the ability to contextualize your video, and it'll have the ability to contextualize it in relation to all of your other videos, in relation to other videos on the same topic, and draw conclusions for the viewer about how this is. So it's harder to game that system by stuffing keywords or doing whatever happens to be trendy at the moment, or doing crazy thumbnails. And to your point, making just really good content, which is what YouTube has always said, make good content. But it's hard for them using, I think, and this is just speculation, the systems that they had in place, it's hard for that to work. But with artificial intelligence, I think it can analyze content.
And it's good for the content creator, because it's like, just do what you do. We have systems which will just like do what you do, so you don't need to do all this other silly stuff that used to take away from your everything, right? Like the amount of creators we've had on this show and just been like, I don't know what to do, so it just feels like I whatever, like it takes that away. No, just be JJ, just like go set up your camera. And the best thing is, it not only helps the content creators, but it helps the viewers, because it'll be able to figure out whether a viewer is interested in looking at a Jimmy DiResta fancy artistic project or a Steve Ramsey you know, the difference between an aspirational project that you're just looking at, or a casual viewer, or someone who's just looking for like the epoxy river tables or whatever they are, like that can now be directed to the people who consume that, as opposed to the people who consume certain keywords and then just get lumped into a category of these people who are all fighting for these people's attention. All of the silos for viewers are going to be much different, and it's going to be much easier for YouTube to serve up Steve Ramsey and other creators like Steve Ramsey, as opposed to Steve Ramsey and all of the other woodworking channels on YouTube, which could be, you know, all different styles of videos and whatnot.
I'm excited. I'm excited about that kind of becoming a reality, and that it would be a different way. And I think a lot of people right now who are real popular YouTubers might suddenly become old school. Because
really good quality content is going to float to the top, because even right. like last week, the I forget her name, but the lady with the 800,000 subscribers that put out 25 minute videos about amazing subjects that
Sabine,
we talked.
Sabine Hoffman.
Right.
Better.
Yeah. That's who I'm on YouTube to discover. So right. I love that YouTube sees that and now it's just going to show me more, you know, real quality. She did
more,
not.
Any more Sunny V2, huh?
Yeah. I need less docu videos.
Oh, you sent me a video about some guy, kind of a scathing review of Sunny V2 videos.
Yes.
And about kind of how the death of the video essay, which was a little dramatic, but they're not dying or anything. They're more popular than ever, but He made a good point, because I was hooked into those Sunny V2 videos for a while. I'm like, well, this guy's pretty good. He's really, but then you start to see what he's doing. It's like, wait a second, is he just like basically churning out rewritten Wikipedia articles and stuff? But he's got that Australian accent that makes him sound like more.
That's it. And I mean, whatever. I'm sure you'd. It's easy to replicate. I'm sure a bunch of people, I'm sure, are already trying to do it, but, and there's enough room for one person to do it. But I also think that we're already on that trajectory with the docu-series and the, remember what happened to Ja Rule? You know what? I don't care what happened to Ja Rule, and I don't need to watch a 20-minute video.
I'll just Wikipedia it myself.
Yeah, it's a very good point though, Steve. Like the people who are just like feeding that system. It's the TikTok. It's why TikTok doesn't have much teeth, because all of that can just be generated by AI. There's no actual personality.
You know, and if we're thinking about this stuff, you know that people at YouTube
right.
are
doing
well
it for years.
Well ahead of this, and they know what they're trying to do. Except for the sort by oldest thing, where they kind of screwed that up.
Well, they thankfully we have Steve Ramsey to make all of that.
Oh, the other thing I mentioned in my video too, if I had to pick the one biggest blunder of YouTube, it was Google+. But even that, they got rid of it because the backlash was so bad.
Google+, and you had to sign up for a whole separate thing. And I remember we had a Google+ page.
Yes, and the
I
circles.
Didn't know how to, yeah,
you
I
had
didn't
to like
to,
circle people, and it was real confusing.
I didn't know how to change my profile picture, and then it changed your profile picture, but it wasn't your YouTube picture. Oh,
this was one of those things. I had a feeling it was totally designed by just, you know, developer nerds who weren't really aware of how people actually function and use this stuff.
But to your point, they repaired it, they fixed it, they changed it, they modified
it. They completely scrapped it, because that was what was pissing people off, is you couldn't leave comments on YouTube unless you were a Google+.
Yeah.
If you had a Google+ account, and that was weird. Do you remember, I included a little clip from her video, Emma Blackery had the, with her ukulele, and had the fuck Google+ video. Yes. It was so funny. Like, I included a little clip from that in my video. That thing was going hot everywhere. It was so funny.
When are we going to be able to see your 15 years of YouTube?
I think I'll post it today. You know, I don't see why I need to wait till Friday or anything. I'll just go ahead and do it. It's not like a real video.
Yeah. Well, if you're listening to this, you've made it to the end of our podcast.
Then you've already
you.
Seen it.
And if you haven't seen it, now you know that it's live. So go and watch Steve Ramsey's 50, what's the title?
I think it's what... 15 years of you. What 15? I don't know. Just look for 15 years. 15 years. What I've learned from YouTube's 15 years of bullshit.
Apparently not how to pick a title.